Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
But I would have been so happy if I was in 10th place. I've been smashing it. I mean, probably filled with false confidence and then come last. But I would have been, you know, I would have been going in thinking that it was all going to be amazing.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Bakedown podcast. We are broadcasting for 2023 Series 14. It's crazy to think how long the Bake Off has been going. But here we are again, and we have Biscuit Week this week. And joining me again, as always, we have the lovely Howard, Dan and Jane as we talk through Biscuit Week. Now, guys, it's been quite... We've said this before. It's been Cake Week, Biscuit Week and then usually Bread Week. Straight away. So do we think Bread Week's coming next? Is it following that same pattern?
Yeah. Isn't it always week three? I think it wasn't week three when Howard was in the tent. But
no, that's a long
time. Jane, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah, it was definitely week three for me. And it seems to have followed that pattern ever since. So unless they're going completely off-piste, then it'll be Bread next week.
Fabulous. Jane, speaking of which, it is Biscuit Week this week, which means it is your next class for our fantastic Mystery Bake Along series. So, Jane, can you talk us through what is going to be your second week Biscuit Week Mystery Bake Along class?
Yes, I'm not going to do custard cream because as much as I love, I'm sure we'll talk about it, the buttercream that they're using, that might not be accessible to everybody around the world. And we don't all want to buy cutters, do we, for something, especially if you're signing up at short notice. So I am doing marshmallow biscuits. I am going to do it based on a walnut whip. I don't know whether many people listening will know what a walnut whip is. I think they did one in the tent a few years ago, actually, not so very long ago. It used to be a lovely chocolate thing that looked a bit like a upside down cone or a pyramid, and it had chocolate base. It then had a walnut in it and a coffee flavored marshmallow-ish stuff, and then a walnut on the top. And then they started removing the walnuts, and now they've removed the walnut whips, I think. And so mine is going to have a walnut based shortbread. It's going to have an optional coffee gel in there, but some people don't like coffee and that's fine. Some people won't necessarily be able to get the agar for that gel. So that would be optional. It'll just take a little bit of the sweetness off, but it's going to have a big walnut in it. It's then going to have a walnut and cinnamon flavoured marshmallow. It's not going in a mould because a lot of you guys won't have moulds. So we're going to do it all freehand. So it looks a little bit informal. We're going to cover it in dark chocolate or milk chocolate. Dark chocolate makes it a little less sweet. Then we're going to put some crushed walnuts on the top and drizzle it with some white chocolate. Absolutely delicious. And your shot of sugar for probably about a week, I would have thought. So lovely shortbread, which you can just make generally because it's delicious. Good egg-free, that which might make a lot of people happy, egg-free marshmallow. I'm not doing an egg-based one. I noticed a lot of the bakers did, but there we go. We're going to be making some delicious marshmallowy biscuits.
That sounds very complicated, Jane. Are you going to get this done in less than 2 hours?
Oh, I shouldn't think so, do I?
Absolutely not. So that sounds absolutely fantastic. So if you want to come and join us for Jane's Great British Bake Off Mystery Bake Along Week 2 for Biscuit Week, making some fantastic walnut whip inspired marshmallow biscuits, you can join us on Sunday the 8th of October with the lovely Jane and myself, and we shall see you guys there. Well, let's crack on, because we have 11 bakers to get through and 3 challengers. So let's start off with our signature challenge, which this week, as we've sort of talked about, was to make 12 identical marshmallow biscuits. Now, these are biscuits either topped or filled with marshmallow. The shape, design and flavour was open to interpretation. And we had 2.5 hours to do this challenge. Now, everybody basically seemed to split between a tea cake or a wagon wheel. Howard, which one would you have gone for?
Oh, do I have to choose? I wanted to do something informal like Jane.
Do something informal then, Howard. Break the mould.
Yeah, well, literally, yeah. I think ages ago you asked me to do a wagon wheel, and I don't think I've done that recipe. So it's too late now, isn't it?
A bit late now. But Dan, you have done tea cakes before, haven't you?
Yeah, I love a bit of marshmallow. I love a marshmallow tea cake. And obviously, as Jane said, people may not have the moulds on short notice, so we wouldn't really do that. But it's a great way to create a really uniform finish with very little effort. But another one you can do, and I've seen this is on tea cakes, where you can pipe the marshmallow. When it sets, you then just dip it into chocolate, and you end up with chocolate covering the marshmallow. So if you don't have all the equipment, there's other ways you can do them. And just a big excuse for a huge chunk of marshmallow, and I don't think you can go wrong. I think Prue was very dismissive about marshmallow.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. I thought that was there must be a ism against marshmallow. I don't know. But it was very upsetting to me. I think a delicious marshmallow can be absolutely wonderful. Wouldn't you agree, Jane?
Oh, I would, absolutely. I love marshmallow, and I love just ordinary big chunky marshmallows. They're delicious. I love that sort of corn floury cornstarch coating on them. Yes, I do like marshmallow a lot. We used to have ones called snowballs.
Oh,
which
yes.
Were the biscuit, the marshmallow, covered in a milk chocolate and then dipped in toasted coconut. Loved it because I love coconut. But one of the things that annoyed me this week, mildly irritated maybe, is Paul said it's got to look shop made.
What does that mean?
And I thought, well, one, what does that mean? And two, isn't that the charm of home baking? Is that it looks beautiful and homemade and therefore isn't going to taste like a shop made one. I've never seen in an artisan bakery marshmallow cake, so I always think of the Tunnock's tea cakes, where they're just so factory made, they're boring. So I don't think shop made is necessarily a good part of the brief.
Yes, I'm ready to join you, Jane, on your lifelong mission to just sort of crap all over anything Paul Hollywood says. I'm right there with you. I really don't like that either, because I think, you know, most of these shop-bought things have been made by robots in a factory. And why would we want something we made at home with love and our own time and attention to look like it was made by a robot? I think that's ridiculous. Uniform, absolutely. You want things to look uniform on the plate. But shop-bought, oh, I don't think so.
No, I agree. And I'm going to be nice to Paul this series.
Oh, are we going
to
swap?
Just to let you know.
Okay, all right.
I'm going up to Scotland shortly, so I don't want to be attacked by people wielding Tunnock's tea cake. So I'm going to do quite when they do that. But I agree. And I also think that Prue was wandering a little bit with this idea that it has to have something to offset the marshmallow, something citrusy or whatever. Mm. I thought, no, actually, it can be chocolate. And, you know, a nice vanilla-y kind of flavour. So I think, to be honest, I think Paul and Prue at that point were just looking for something to say, not always making a lot of sense.
I think it's sometimes hard to find anything to criticise about a chocolate-covered marshmallow. I mean, what could you possibly say? It's delicious as it is.
Yes, hear, hear, I agree.
Well, that brings me to a point, actually, where Paul and Prue disagreed over Dana's tea cakes. She had cinnamon biscuit with a speculoos buttercream and a vanilla marshmallow in that very fancy swirly mould. Paul said that the spice was too powerful and overwhelmed the marshmallow, but then Prue thinks that marshmallow tastes of so little that it should be overwhelmed. So if you, I noticed a lot of people just went for a vanilla marshmallow, so hoping that the other flavours would then overtake that marshmallow flavour. So do you think that's right? It depends if you want marshmallow to be the hero in the middle or not.
The marshmallow is the majority of the cake, okay? So you want to taste the marshmallow. If I didn't want to taste marshmallow, I'd make something else. I think that's absolute nonsense. I did think it was a mistake on Dana's behalf to use that mould, and that's exactly what I was talking about. You could just pipe a swirl of meringue, let it set, maybe chill it, and then dip it into melted chocolate and pull it back out again. And if you do it like in a tall, thin thing, like a mug or something, you can get, you know, deep chocolate without wasting tons of chocolate. And that would have been just as effective, if not more beautiful, and she wouldn't have broken the mold. So it was a beautiful mold, but I don't think she had enough time to set them. But no, the marshmallow is the hero. If you don't want to eat marshmallow, eat something different. Nonsense.
I absolutely agree. I did love the mold. It made me think, I've got some silicone individual Bundt cake tins, and I wondered whether that would be rather nice. But again, in 2.5 hours, you've not got enough time for that to set. So poor old Dana, but they did look so pretty.
They did.
And piping marshmallow is not necessarily the easiest thing, because if you pipe it before it's cool, then it's a bit too runny. And if you leave it a little bit longer, then it's quite hard to get out of the nozzle. As I found when I put some crushed walnuts in there, it's very hard to get it out of the nozzle if your bits are too big. So, but enough of my problems.
Howard, stop laughing.
Well, there were lots of lovely flavours we had going on. Again, a lot of chocolate because of the coating around the outside of the marshmallow biscuit. But Howard, whose flavours really stood out for you?
Oh, well, we've already touched on Dana, haven't we? I thought they sounded lovely. I did like the idea of Nikki's, to be honest. I thought that rhubarb and ginger, if only she'd put a bit more in there, would have been a lovely combination. Mm. Yeah.
You stole my favourite one.
Have I?
Yeah.
Oh, Howard.
I thought it was a shame because the flavours did sound so good. And as they sort of joked about many times, there just wasn't any jam in them. You know, it was that was where most of the flavour was. But I love Nikki. Can I just talk about Nikki for a second? I don't know where that accent, I mean, it was obviously a Scottish accent, but I don't know where exactly in Scotland that is from. I don't know if either of you know, but she sounds just like the Crankies, doesn't she?
She does.
And I only noticed this week. Last week it didn't pop out to me, but yeah, she's got a really strong Scottish accent. Where is that from? That's definitely a regional Scottish accent.
She was born in Dundee.
Right, okay. Maybe that's what that is. I don't
Everyone's
know,
going, I don't know where that is.
It's an adorable accent, and I wonder if the Americans can understand anything she's saying.
But I love her even more for all those reasons. But did you see her dogs? She has got two sable, that's the colouring, when they're sort of multicoloured, spaniels. And they are called Haggis and Bracken. And
they are absolutely adorable.
So I have got two spaniels that are sable, called Minnie and Florence. Only I'm not sure mine are purebred. They don't look as beautiful as Nikki's, to be honest. We're convinced that the mother sort of was a little generous with her favours and we got something that isn't purebred spaniel.
What a lovely way to put it.
I'm trying to be delicate. So I particularly love her dogs as well as the way she talks. I mean, I love the way she goes, oh, dearie me, and or something like that. And then she... It ran out a wee bit, but Paul was quite...
It's a beautiful accent. It's so cute, isn't it?
It really is. I love her to pieces. And may she stay there. And she's totally not intimidated by Paul. I think it's hilarious. I love her.
Yeah, she's got a great attitude.
And just before we started recording, Howard, we were talking about Nikki's fantastic collars that she has on her tops underneath.
They're getting bigger every week, aren't they? So I don't know whether next week It's like, yeah, she'll be able to take off with them, won't she? Like Dumbo. Very impressive. Do you think she makes them herself?
I hope so. Yeah. I really hope so.
Maybe. Maybe it's like, you know how Janusz wore a different colour of the rainbow flag every week and so on?
Yeah.
Maybe Nikki's doing, she's in for a long game. What was that comedy thing where the hat kept getting bigger every time the shot changed? And I think in Naked Gun or something. I think it's going to be like that with her collars. Just every week, just a larger collar until someone says something.
Well, she did rather well, did Nikki? Well, I think she did rather well. They kept going on about the lack of jam, and she did make a point of not putting too much on when she really should have gone that little bit further. But she did very well. Now, what did we all think about Rowan's? Because this was a tea cake. It was a lemon rosemary shortbread with sort of a parma violet flavour marshmallow and a raspberry gel. So very floral, I'm thinking. Paul was not happy with the parma violet taste, but he said it wasn't particularly strong, so he didn't mind. So what did we think about Rowan's?
You know, I mean, it's one of those things, I think, there were a few of them where I think, well, I'm prepared not to knock it until I've tried it. So I think, yeah, it was, I mean, Prue said it was perfect, didn't she? So I think he had got that combination of flavours right. Unusual, but yeah, we like a bit of, well, I like a bit of unusual.
Indeed you do. I just think there was probably one too many flavours. You know, lemon, rosemary, parma violet and raspberry. It just all just seemed a little bit too much for me. I used to like parma violets when I was a child, so I'm of that generation. But, you know, I'd like Howard, I'm not going to knock it till I try it. The combination might have worked beautifully. So, yeah, looked fabulous.
Yeah, I think it would have worked well for me without the raspberry gel. But then, as you say, we don't know. We haven't tried it. But I was a bit saddened in a way that Rowan sort of said, oh, well, I'll cut back on the parma violet. Because I just think, like, if you like something, then you like it. You know, like before we go on the show, we all test the recipes, we make a few different versions, and then we try them on all our friends. And if you like something, I think it's a shame to not make it, or, you know, because you think someone else may not like it. So I don't know. I don't know. We never know how it would have worked out differently, of course, but I'm glad it went well for him. You know, when people amend a recipe on the fly, you do often think like, oh God, what's going to happen? But luckily he got a good result. But it is always dangerous territory, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, we know that they don't like Rose very much. We know they don't like, well, I mean, Paul doesn't like gherkins, does he? We know Mark.
Oh, he is fussy.
I know. Mary didn't like shredded coconuts. So I would always be tempted to leave them out. You know, if you're making them for somebody to judge, leave out the things that they don't like. I totally agree with you, Dan. You know, be your own person. But it's a bit like doing anything for a client. You know, if you're designing something or doing whatever, you have to go towards their tastes. So perhaps people ought to just be a little bit mindful of that, maybe.
Well, I'm a parent of young children, so my attitude is you'll get what you're given. That's how I... What's for dinner? Dinner is for dinner. Yeah.
Well, segueing quite naturally onto Dan's bake there, he said this was a wagon wheel that was very much inspired by his son's favourite flavours and the only things he will eat, which was peanut butter, banana and chocolate. And I'm pretty sure we had that last week. I think Dana's dog cake was banana and peanut butter. So this is a popular flavour combination. But so something the judges didn't seem to like, but they said technically and texture-wise, it was very spot on.
I don't know. I mean, like banana, chocolate, peanut butter, it sounds like a protein smoothie. I'm not really into it, I got to be honest. But, you know, each to their own, and sure, those are kid-friendly flavours. But I thought they looked great, actually, and I've made a wagon wheel in the tent before. Did I come third or fourth in that fourth in that technical, I think. So I can make a wagon wheel. They're quite tricky to make, I'll tell you that. So fair play to him. I think I would have stuck with the tea cake. What would you have done, Jane? Oh, would you have done what you were doing in your class?
I would have. No, I would have, because it would have had to have been identical and all that. I think I would have gone for a mould.
Mm.
I was going to go for a mould for our class that looks more like a sort of chocolate finger. Again, I didn't use a mould because but not everybody can have one. So I would have gone for a mould, I think, because it just makes them look so, so neat. And that's what they want. And then you can just decorate the top. But I love banana and peanut butter. If I've come back and I've sort of missed lunch but don't want to eat too much because dinner is looming, I'll have banana and peanut butter, and it's sort of sweet and a little bit salty, a little bit savoury. I really enjoy it. So I personally would have really enjoyed Dan's Wagon Wheels. I don't know what's wrong with peanut butter and banana and then chocolate
did,
on the top.
Did you pick Dan to win? Was he your choice?
Oh, hang on, I've written a list so we don't forget. Yes.
Oh, I see.
You can't change that list just because you've got it, Jane.
No. Look, here it is. I've got it all written down. So on the back of last week's notes. So, So I'll be able to tell you when your winners. How would you have picked Dan? We've all picked Dan in our
final
three, but yeah. I'd picked him as my winner. But there we go. Anyway,
he's singing his praises today. Yeah, no, it did look great. It did look great.
I thought they all looked great. I mean, I wasn't.
Who's looked great in a different way that I wasn't expecting? Because you know when someone fulfills the brief in a way that just isn't what you thought of at all or even considered? And that was Matty. Now, Matty, yes. I thought he flew under the radar quite a lot last week. Mm. But this week he made something really interesting. And I sort of had him pegged as an early out last week. And this week I'm like, oh, actually, I think that boy's got some good ideas. I think he could do really well.
Yeah, but Tasha did something similar to him.
Who?
Tasha. Oh, yeah, Tasha with
Tasha.
Good.
Tasha did something. How much coffee have you had to drink?
Four.
All right, there we go. That explains it. Tasha did something similar to nice chunky biscuits with marshmallow in the middle and sort of some chocolate on and then a drizzle. They were both very, very similar, weren't they? I thought. So, yes, I would agree. I like the idea of. When does orange jam become marmalade? I don't know.
It's just the bitterness of the peel, isn't it? Because when you make navel orange with a navel oranges, it's quite sweet. It's when you make it with Seville oranges, it's very bitter.
Anyway.
I don't know if there may be a technical difference. I don't know.
No, I don't know either. But I thought, I must sort of just go into Tasha and jump in the gun, probably. Mm. I thought that, did we think the handshake was warranted?
I don't know. I mean, listen. Yes. No, I'm not taking anything away from Tasha. I'm sure it was absolutely lovely. Was it a surprise? Actually, yeah, it kind of was. But then we don't taste them, as you like to say every time, Jane. Like, we don't taste them. Maybe they were incredible. But I was a little surprised, yeah.
Did she have? She didn't have the jam or the sharpness thing in there, or did I miss that?
No.
No, it just seemed to be a malted chocolate shortbread with a malted marshmallow and then a caramelised white chocolate ganache drizzle. But that's how I've always known Wagon Wheels to be. Never any jam in them, just biscuit, marshmallow, biscuit.
Yeah.
No, really? No jam. Oh, yeah. Never had jam ones when I was little.
The jam, there was a jam version and a non-jam version.
Oh, but sure.
Jam ones
yeah.
are blue.
I've never had the jam ones.
Do you know what I think I'm against in terms of Tasha? They were half covered in chocolate. And to me, listen, it's kind of beautiful, but anyone who's tried to cover a sandwich biscuit in chocolate knows that half the skill is getting the whole thing to look evenly coated.
Oh,
just dipping half of the biscuit in and lifting it back out again is very easy to do. Anyone with a pair of hands can do it. Trying to get it evenly coated is crazy difficult. So I think although it looks pretty, she kind of cheated the difficult bit. Yes, she did.
I thought it was very sensible. I thought they looked lovely. And
they did, but she cheated.
I think we saw a couple of examples, and I think that was one. And I think when we get onto the showstopper, it's Josh, of people doing really, really sensible things. Mm. And if they take a sensible approach to the task, I don't think we can really call it cheating.
No, I know.
But I think they sidestepped a very difficult task and sort of made it a bit easier for themselves in the process. And I think that was a measured decision.
Isn't that what we say you should always do?
Yes. It's called being sensible.
It's calling being sensible.
This is something that we always talk about. You three always talk about, especially early on in the bake-off. Take those sensible markers. You know, don't go bonkersly crazy and make your dog because it's precious to you. No, don't do that. Make a lobster because it's flat and it's small and you don't have to stack the cake. So you three are always talking about that. So, Dan,
are you suggesting? I think. How dare you? Are you suggesting that I'm taking a hard line on Tasha now just because I picked her as my initial winner and then dropped her. Is that what you're saying?
I couldn't possibly comment, Dan. I couldn't possibly comment.
No, you don't think, Dan, you're a fickle, fickle thing. You know how lovely Josh's was. And who did you pick? Oh, yes, look, Josh.
I did pick Josh. We'll get on to Josh later. I have plenty to say about that.
Let's continue with the lovely signature bakes. Josh did really well, I think, with his beautiful little Black Forest tea cakes with a cherry biscuit, Black Forest jam, vanilla marshmallow. The comments there was neat as a pin, identical, spot on, and the sweet tart balance was really good. So I think Josh sort of flew under the radar a bit there. Tasha's handshake sort of masked how well Josh did there, I think, maybe.
I thought the decoration was nice. I didn't think it was amazingly uniform. The tea cakes themselves were quite uniform. The cherries were a little bit all over the place. But I think he was blown out of the water by some other people who decorated their stuff really beautifully. And I think that's maybe why he wasn't noticed so much. Can I just say, is it Christy who did the little white chocolate with the roses?
Yes.
They were stunning. And anyone who tempers chocolate knows that white chocolate is the hardest one to temper, the most temperamental, it's the softest. She made a rod for her own back. And I thought hers are going to be awful. And they came out amazing. So I think Christy, I don't think she got enough praise for what she did. I thought hers were stunning, absolutely stunning.
I think, though, white chocolate with marshmallow.
Sweet, yeah.
So just made it, they were beautiful. And I loved the little bit of rose decoration when she painted it on the mould. Lovely. And everything you said about tempering white chocolate has to be really good quality white chocolate to temper it. But I just thought, oh, golly, that's going to be sweet. That's my
opinion. Hurt your teeth. Yeah.
Not really? Well, if I had any left, it would be.
possibly hence the comment about more berry flavour being needed, just that sharpness to cut through the sweetness of the marshmallow and white chocolate. Yeah.
Maybe.
Did she have raspberries in it, or was it what was
the mixed berry? It just said mixed berry.
Yeah. There's a reason they're typically paired with a raspberry jam, because it is lovely and sweet, but it is very sharp as well. So that is a good balance. Also, can I ask you just a very quick question about Tasha? She said, like a malty drink. Is that Horlicks? Is it Ovaltine? What drink?
Yeah, more it's like
Milo,
Ovaltine.
It's called Milo.
Yeah.
Is it Milo?
Maybe Horlicks or something like that. One of those malted drinks.
Yeah, it's a very specific brand. It's called Milo. I've seen it in the shops and I've never actually known what it is. It's in a little green tin.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that. Okay.
Yeah. It was interesting because picking up on what Jane said earlier about trying to kind of play to the judges' taste. I mean, I don't know whether Tasha would have known that Milo was a favourite of Prue, but it turned out that it was, wasn't it? It took her back to her childhood. So interesting.
I don't think Prue knew you could get it in the UK.
No.
I used to see it in my local supermarket, like,
yeah,
all the time.
But she gets people to do her shopping for her, doesn't she?
Yes, of course. Prue has a stage show, so, you know, maybe she's been going along and taking notes or something. Who knows?
You see. Now, two people we haven't mentioned are Abby and Saku.
And Keith.
How can we have missed
Keith?
We need to talk about Keith.
I assumed you were saving the best till last.
We shall talk about Keith. But Abby did a lovely tea cake, a pistachio shortbread, saffron marshmallow, an orange curd. Now, they were a bit messy, but I think Prue said they were quite exciting. Possibly a bit too much orange and a bit more finesse needed. So not particularly bad, but maybe not particularly stellar, that one.
This is where I take issue. Like, this, I take issue with sometimes they say things are neat and they say some things are messy. And sometimes I completely disagree. I don't see it. I thought Abby's weren't, like, perfectly uniform, but I thought messy was a little harsh. I thought they were all right, didn't you?
Yeah, maybe it was.
I just thought too many rose petals on top. I thought that they were just a little bit kind of...
A bit extra.
Yeah. Just pare it back a little bit, I think. But I thought the flavours were really interesting.
I like the idea of the pistachio around the outside. Maybe the pistachio ought to have been chopped a little finer to make it a little bit neater. And lovely Tom, who is in my series, when we went to Candice's wedding, he made... And we all did the cake table for the wedding. and he made financier, which were lovely. And he put rose petals on, but he didn't, there were mini financier. He didn't put those big bits of rose petal on, which I feel is just like eating a bit of cardboard or paper, quite honestly. They don't add anything, do they? He blitzed them in a food processor, so they were rose dust.
Mm.
Oh, it looked so pretty. And you didn't have all that, oh God, I'm eating dried leaves in my mouth, which was, I thought, ingenious. And a lovely, lovely little tip if you want to use it on a cake is blitz them to a fine powder. They're really nice.
I might use that. I bought some rose petals, actually, and I bought, you know, it was 100 grams or something. And it turns out that 100 grams of rose petals is actually quite a lot.
Yes.
So yeah. I could open a soap factory with the amount that I've got in my pantry.
Well, blitz them. They look very pretty.
Hmm. Let's talk very quickly then about Saku, and then we'll move on to Keith. Saku did a quite a different shape. She did the more oblong. I've written fancy wagon wheels here. And again, I just wondered, Dan, if you thought she'd cheated a bit, or if you thought she'd done really quite a sensible thing of making them oblong and making them not wagon wheels, so when they're not coated in chocolate, it kind of
Dan's
looks
not
okay.
Going to be the judge of cheating for the whole series, is it?
I thought they were lovely.
Oh,
did you?
Oh, very anti-Tasha comments earlier then, because Saku didn't want any chocolate on hers.
I'm just winding you up. Listen, I would have personally liked to see them completely covered. And I tell you why I care about that, because when we made wagon wheels in a technical, people who didn't cover the sides got a lot of jip for it. Like, Paul was very upset at them. And it is hard to cover the sides, and to cover them, fill them with marshmallow and cover them is difficult to do. So it's good to see somebody execute a skill well that is hard to do. Is it a smart decision? Yeah, maybe. Maybe it is a smart decision. I get it. And they looked, you know, perfectly lovely. But it's just, you know, I will not apologise for my strong opinions on these matters. Go on, Jane. You're itching to chastise me. Go on.
No, I'm not at all. I mean, I'm going to go with a positive for completely covering in chocolate. Now, I completely understand why they didn't in the tent, and I think it was a very good decision given the time constraints. But the one thing covering them in chocolate does is keeps them fresher for longer.
Mm.
So 12 biscuits, you know, they absorb some moisture. When I was testing out mine, I made cinnamon and with an apple, almost like an apple jam, but the moisture came out of the apple jam into my biscuit. But the ones that I then coated completely in chocolate stayed remarkably crisp, interestingly. So covering them in chocolate, you're not going to eat 12 of those biscuits in one go, so unless you're having a party, cover them in chocolate, because they'll still be perfectly fine sort of 2-3 days later, whereas they might not be if you didn't cover them completely in chocolate.
Well, they wouldn't last very long in my house. I'm sure they'd all just get eaten. But yes, it's a good tip. It does keep the air out, as it were.
So Keith!
Keith! Yes, we do need to talk about Keith. Keith! Poor Keith! Yeah, a bit of a disaster, Keith, didn't he? I don't know what was happening with the syrup for his marshmallow, but it just was not coming to temp at all. But then it did seem to work in the end, but then he just didn't have time to finish it and it looked really messy, but apparently it was delicious. So what did we think of Keith's?
Well, I don't care about his bake, frankly. It was perfectly fine. I just love the idea that he used to do stand-up.
Yeah.
Which I thought a more unlikely candidate for stand-up, I don't think I could have come across. But then when Alison kept on about, go on then, what would be your opening joke? What would be your opening joke? Then the timer went off and she said, oh, what's that timer for? And he said, that's time for the interview to end. And I thought that was very quick. I really liked that. So his bake, it was fine. It did look a bit messy. It was just sort of peanut and jam and things. So not much to say about it that we haven't said about everybody else. But stand up. Oh, my goodness. I hope he relaxes and we can get to see him do something funny. I think it'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
Still waters run deep.
This is another one of those things where I'm going to have to admit my ignorance. But what is a peanut butter ganache? So Keith had got some and also Dan had got some. So is it literally chocolate ganache with peanut butter added to it?
I would imagine so. Something? I can't imagine what else it would be.
I don't know what peanut butter ganache is.
That would be thick, wouldn't it?
If I do chocolate orange ganache, it's just because I've added orange to it. Yeah. So I'm guessing it's just peanut butter. Smooth peanut butter, I'm guessing.
I've never made that. I don't know.
No.
Oh, I'd like chunky bits then.
Mm. I'm allergic to peanuts.
Yeah. You sounded like Homer Simpson there.
Chunky.
Well, quite a lot of people do it. You know, Google it. There's an awful lot of people that do it. So, yeah.
I really feel I'm missing out with peanut butter. I'm allergic to peanuts. I've never had
bad
it.
Bad luck. I love
it. I know. It gets featured a lot. I feel like I'm missing out.
I love it.
It's fine. It's not one of the flavours I'd... If I could go, you know, my whole life without it, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Oh,
you know.
Just before we move on to the next sessions bit, Alison and Noel, I think their chemistry is amazing, actually. Yeah. You know, the last couple of presenters, I've felt at times it's a little bit forced. It doesn't feel it with them. I love the way in this challenge she's fanning herself and Noel says, oh, I thought you were my biggest fan, or something along those lines. Didn't really write it down. And then she bursts into laughter. It was such a wonderful, natural, unscripted moment. I think she is going to be absolutely fantastic. That's why I think I'm a huge fan.
I think she's absolutely great. And I think she creates the humour, but without really making it too much about herself. Do you know what I mean? She just sort of is in the moment, making fun, and I think that's got to be great for everyone. And you, as you say, Noel, very, very natural with her. There's no sort of hint of, you know, with others, people, they were obviously staged bits, and I don't feel that. I feel that most of the interactions they're choosing to show us are just them genuinely having fun, and I think that's lovely.
I agree. I think
this picks up on something Jane said last week, where I think you said it had been edited really well. We got to know the Bakers, we got to see what they were doing. You know, and I think what they've done is they've taken out some of those kind of set comedy pieces that they had at the beginning of each bake or partway through time calls and what have you, and just speeded things up a little bit. So I think it works a lot better.
I agree, absolutely.
I think the programme is better for it. I really, really do.
I do too. Absolutely.
Now, someone who did amuse me this week was Saku. She said, I cannot remember what it was now, but I remember watching this and she had the sassiest comment. What did she say? Was it to Noel or something?
I think in the showstopper, she was getting really stressed and she wasn't getting... Or maybe it was in the technical. She wasn't finishing. She was really struggling. And Noel just came up to her and said, are you all right? And she went, no. Can I do anything? No. Do you want to get on my shoulders? And she went, no. He's like, okay, I've just left. Yeah, yeah. He's like, yes, put him in his place.
I couldn't remember exactly what it was. But I just thought week two is very early to be telling the host to get lost. I just thought it was quite funny.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So leaving this signature challenge behind, where I think everybody did reasonably well, it was a few front runners, but, you know, still pretty good overall. Nobody had an absolute disaster, even poor Keith. Even Keith's disaster biscuits that didn't look brilliant still tasted wonderful. So absolutely fine. So let's move on to our technical challenge, which was 12 custard creams, identical custard creams. For those of you who aren't maybe aware of what custard creams are, maybe those of you in the States who don't know what custard creams are, they are basically just lovely vanilla-y biscuits sandwiched together, a little bit like a golden Oreo, but in an oblong. And that's basically it. They're quite good classic biscuits. And that's what we had to do.
And I have made these.
And you have made these, Dan.
Yes. I bought the cutters. You know, there's a set for jammy dodgers and bourbons and custard creams. And I bought the set
party
of
rigs.
Yeah.
I've got them too.
Yeah. So I have actually made custard creams with the sort of official, I guess, custard cream recipe. So I would have been so happy if I was in the tent for this. I've been smashing it. I mean, probably filled with false confidence and then come last. But I would have been, you know, I would have been going in thinking that it was all going to be amazing. I thought this was a great challenge.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting to see they had so much trouble cutting out that dough. That dough needed to be really chilled for them to get that sharp.
Possibly frozen, yeah.
Possibly frozen. And we all know that it's very hard working with a sticky dough. So, yeah, that was where most of them fell down. And making sure, as we, of course, all know, that so your biscuits don't spread and therefore lose definition, you need to get those chilled down before you bake them. You know, they only had an hour and a half. I'm sure they were all panicking, which is why they did it. So I did feel sorry for them. And some of them did look a bit of a mess, to be honest. But it's all about the chilling, all about the chilling. And lovely buttercream. It's French meringue buttercream. And I think we've talked about it in previous series, all the different buttercreams and things. But French meringue buttercream is using the egg yolks as opposed to the whites. So you whisk up the egg yolks and the sugar in the way that you would the egg whites and the sugar. Obviously, you don't get anywhere near the same volume, so that it's a bit like when you're whisking up for a Genoese sponge or something like that. Anyway, your egg yolks, no egg whites, and then you pour in your sugar syrup. You don't get much. You don't get much volume. Yes, so it's a lovely way of using up egg yolks. If you've got to ice a whole cake, you'll need a lot of egg yolks. So I wouldn't recommend that. But for biscuits, absolutely delicious.
I feel awful now. Because when I've made custard creams, I've done it with an ordinary buttercream with a bit of custard powder in.
I'm sure that tastes delicious. That wouldn't be much of a technical challenge, though, would it, really?
No, I think we did this as a class about 3 years ago now.
Yes.
And we did fig rolls at the same time.
Oh, you did?
So
yes.
Fig rolls and custard creams, yeah. So that's why the custard creams didn't take quite as long to do. Yeah.
It's okay, Howard. You don't have to justify your recipe. It was lovely. It's fine. It's fine, Howard.
I seem to remember making a custard and then mixing it with butter, but that would be a creme mousseline. I don't know. Can we look up this recipe and find out how they made them? We'll have to pull that one up. And was it a French buttercream?
I've got the new Bake Off book coming tomorrow.
We're
hopeful that it will have some of those recipes that we've been questioning.
Mm. Tesco's just put custard powder in their ordinary American buttercream filling.
Oh, well, there you go.
What do the BBC say? Oh, they've got them in the shape of dinosaurs. I think they're in the shape of dinosaurs in this picture.
That's not custard cream.
Oh, no. The BBC have just got icing sugar and butter. They don't even have vanilla in theirs.
Oh, what?
No, they don't.
Oh, so no.
Ignore the BBC one, folks. hang on. What does Mary Berry do? She makes a custard.
Does she?
Oh, I don't know. I've just lost the link. Oh, no, that's her proper custard. That's custard and not...
I'm sure this makes for very, very interesting listening.
Everybody.
We're bakers. Leave us alone. This is interesting to us.
It is. Anyway, there we go. Custard powder. They just made it a little bit more technical by making a French meringue buttercream, if that's what it's called. But there we go. French buttercream. Maybe it's called a French buttercream. There we go.
But delicious.
Indeed. And it did make it very technical because I think, was it Keith who really struggled with his egg yolks and then putting the syrup in too early? So there is a lot of technique to doing this buttercream. So I think it was absolutely the right choice for the technical. But Howard, something I think we have to come to you about is we did have a bit of a dough gate. situation. We almost had another custard gate, didn't we? Very nearly.
Our 2.0.
I know.
Yeah, it has
I know.
To go. Yeah.
Where I think, is it Christy used Rowan's dough and had already rolled it out by the time Rowan had noticed?
Oh. Yeah, but only rolled it out. That's fine. Yeah. She didn't take it. Yeah.
She did all the work for him.
Thank you, Christy. Thanks for the help.
And I think this was mentioned in the Rowan's biscuit was a bit thick, and Christy's biscuit would had very little definition and not rolled out very well. So Christy had clearly done a pretty good job on Rowan's, given it to him, and then Christy had run out of time, so had done a rubbish job on hers, bless her. So it must be so easy to do that. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often, especially in technicals.
Oh, I disagree. I mean, everyone's different, but I know exactly where I put the thing in the fridge. And like, and it's if it's either you put it in the top or the bottom, I don't know how you would forget. I really don't. I mean, I'm not suggesting anyone's doing it on purpose, but it does surprise me that it's happened more than once.
I think you also develop an affinity with your own bakes, don't you? You can tell.
You can tell how you sit down.
How you've wrapped it all.
Yeah.
There's something that you sort of instinctively know that's mine. Yeah.
Mm. Like the way you fold the cling film up or something. Yeah. You can just tell. Yeah.
Cling film? Cling film? What cling film? Sorry. We don't use cling film here.
Sorry. I misspoke.
I think they didn't they?
It was regrettable.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. Not really. I think the other thing that people struggled with, though, as well, moving swiftly on, is baking time. I think quite a few had slightly underbaked, hadn't they? So although you don't want a great deal of colour, if any colour, to the custard cream, it has to be baked through because otherwise it's got that slightly cakey quality to it.
I think when you buy biscuits from a packet, they very often have like no colour on them at all. So I think it's very tempting the second you see that ring of colour to think, oh no, they're overdone and whip them out, especially when it's a very pale biscuit. But yeah, if you don't have a little bit of colour, you're never going to get the snap, are you?
No.
No, but low and slow. You can do them low and slow, actually.
But would that not risk losing definition? I don't know.
It's really interesting because when... Oh, this is probably giving away secrets now. So am I going to wreck my NDA? When I was doing one of my auditions, we had to make some shortbread and take it up. We were given a very specific ingredient list and then make them. And I tried them at 160. I then tried them at a lower temperature. And, I tried them all different temperatures to try and get them right. God, I'd never made so many shortbread biscuits in my life. But as long as you chill them down really, really well, they don't seem to spread. Or they could have got them halfway through, which means they would have set the outside and then drop the temperature down to make sure they just dried out that little bit. Dried out sounds horrible, but so they were baked through, so they were crisp. So I think it was just, again, panic. Oh, they looked done, so therefore they must be done.
Mm.
You know, I don't like overbaking things, but you do sometimes do need to bake them a little bit more than you think.
Yeah, there was a lot of panic in that tent, though, wasn't there? There was a lot of pullings, floppy pastry out of moulds. It was all a little bit terrifying. Mm. And the thing is, when things start to go wrong in the tent, you just sort of flap and panic even more and make everything worse, don't you? Well, I do anyway. So, I did feel for them. But some of them managed to turn out some pretty good biscuits, looked pretty uniform.
Can I just say something that really bothered me, and it has no bearing on bake or anything? It was just something that really bothered me. I don't know who it was, but somebody had put a tray of biscuits into the oven, and instead of the biscuits being lined up like 1, 2, 3, 4, like that, they were just all over the place, like they'd just been thrown on the tray.
Oh.
And it just really annoyed me. And it has nothing to do with bake. I'm sure it was absolutely fine, but it was just, why would you not stack the biscuits neatly when you put them on the tray into the oven?
I know what we'll do. You know, when we do a class in future, we will ask you before we put things in the oven whether it meets your criteria or
exactly the standards.
I think it's important that you do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, to be honest, the only reason I stack things neatly is so that you can keep count of how many you've done and so that you can fit the maximum on the baking tray.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, yeah.
Well, I don't know who it was, so we cannot name the perpetrator. But let's move on to the judging of this technical. The things that were being picked up a lot was the unevenness of the biscuits, the definition of the design, which is a surprisingly fancy design when you have a close look at it. If you just Google custard cream, you can see how swirly all the little edges are. Filling, I think, as well, was something that needed to be looked at, as well as we've just spoken about colour and snappiness of the biscuit. So down there in 11th place was Keith. Now, his comments were messy, uneven, no definition, and like rubber. So I think he really struggled with his filling there. Saku was 10th, very uneven biscuits. A big bunch in the middle who did reasonably well. Christy was 9th, Tasha was 8th, Dana was 7th, Josh was 6th, Matty was 5th, Nikki was 4th. Whew. Rowan was 3rd, Dan was 2nd, he did really, really well, but only just pipping him was Abby, who had good definition, equal colour, very well baked, very crispy and very, very good. And I think at one point somebody said even better than shop bought, so you can't get higher praise than that.
Well, yes, but in fairness, I think if
it's what you'd expect.
Yeah, if you're not going to make them better than what you buy in the shop, then what's the point? That's the reason we make them. We don't make them just to make a slightly inferior product for something you can buy for half the price. We make them to be better. You know, they're more delicious, they're more buttery. Like, that's why we make them. But yeah, they did look pretty great. I have to say, they did look pretty great.
Abby's did look fantastic there. So going into the Showstopper Challenge, again, things looking reasonably even. Keith looking like he's going to be down at the bottom there. Maybe Saku as well, not doing so well. But I think definitely Dan, Tasha, Abby, Josh maybe reasonably up to the top, but it could be anybody's game. Now, before we go into our Showstopper Challenge, we have some questions from our really lovely good. Listeners. Ooh. Please do send in your questions, guys, if you agree or even disagree with something we've said in the podcast. We're more than happy to discuss it. If you have any questions for our bakers or things you want to say about the Bake Off in general, please do get in touch. Now, we have a question here from Stephanie in East London. Hello, Stephanie. Stephanie says, hi, guys. I'm a big fan of the Bake Down and I'm so happy it's back for another year along with the Bake Off. We are as well, Stephanie. I'd like to know, how many requests for bakes do you get for things like weddings and birthdays? And do you actually enjoy doing them? Who wants to start off with that?
Yeah, I'll start off. So, yes, I do enjoy them. But sometimes when they come up, it's all a bit of a panic. You know, last week I had to make a cake for Macmillan coffee morning, and it's sort of a big cake, and I only realized with the day to spare that I'd agreed to make it. I do like to put myself into a bit of a blind panic with this sort of stuff, but no, it's part of the reason I love baking in the first place, is making things to give to other people. Although I do find with the, if someone's paying me to make a cake, I don't really like that. Obviously it's nice to be compensated for my the time and the ingredients, but at the same time I feel like their expectations will be higher, and that fills me with a little bit of trepidation. I see nodding from the other two. What do you say, Howard?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I got a lot of requests, certainly shortly after I'd been on Bake Off. And you think, really? You want me to do your wedding cake? So it's the kind of expectation that people have, right? But and I always thought, I want to do something that is so beautiful that proves that I'm a better baker than perhaps sometimes I came across in the tent.
Yeah.
So then, regardless of how much you get paid for it, you are spending hours and hours and days perfecting this wonderful thing. And in the end, you think, it's not really worth it, is it?
But anyway, yeah, as long exactly as the same.
As
yeah.
long as you're happy with it, that's fine.
I agree with both, actually. And I always used to say I will only do cakes for friends or for charity, because it is very, very difficult to... You can work out what the ingredients costs are, which always shocks me, actually, when I sit down and work out what the ingredients costs are.
Yeah.
But putting your time in there, and your time to think about it, your time to shop, plus the nervous energy, I mean, you can't put a price on that. But what I was finding is people were coming up to me and asking me to do a cake that I didn't even know who they were. I don't do it for a living. I don't make cakes for a living. And they barely spoke to me most of the time. They were sort of nodding acquaintances. And then they would take me to one side and ask me if I would make a cake, almost expecting me to do it for nothing. Mm. And in the end, and it's taken me however many years, 3-4 years to turn around and say either no or actually this is what it'll cost. And putting in a couple of days' time. And then people can choose to do it or they choose not to. Because I don't know about you guys, but we don't earn loads and loads of money. We do work for a living. And I really don't mind doing it for friends or for charity at all. I willingly donate my time and my ingredients and all that. But when somebody I don't know expects it for nothing, I've now at long last learned to say,
no.
Yeah, I'll do your cake for you and it will cost you this.
Yeah.
And if they then say, oh, that's rather a lot of money, you go, well, you know, wait
for them to
do them. That's what it costs. You know, why should I spend my time doing it for somebody who normally doesn't even say hello to me? So
I've had it before where people are like, can you make me a cake to feed 25 children? I'll give you 50 quid for it. And I'm like, are you joking?
Mm.
A cake to feed 25 kids for 50 quid, that's not going to happen. You know, and if you want to buy that kind of cake for that kind of price, go to Tesco, go to somewhere that mass produces cakes. But it's, if you want a bespoke designed cake, it's at least 100 quid before we even start talking about what you want, you know?
Mm.
And I think people don't understand how much time and effort goes into making a cake. So yes, I do love it, but a cake baker I am not. And when people come to me and ask you to make them a cake, almost like they're doing me a favour by giving me work. And I'm like, you're not doing me a favour here. Like, I'm doing you the favour. Let's get it right, you know?
Yeah, because that's what we do, isn't it? We generally kind of wander on the streets just looking for someone who will ask us to make a cake.
Yeah.
We're so desperate.
Well, I'm definitely going to think twice before I ask any of you to make my 30th birthday cake next year.
Yes!
Oh, so,
Sarah, not only will we make it,
we'll hand it written,
eat it with you as well.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yay! Yeah, so that's one each, yeah? You're all going to make me one, yeah?
Sure. Yes. So, friends are okay. Friends are fine. And also, a friend will never turn around to you and be like, oh, it wasn't quite what I expected or, you know, anything like that.
Mm.
So friends are fine. But just if we're not friends, you're not doing me a favour by asking me to make you a cake, I promise you.
Mm.
Totally agree. Right. Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, for your question. And
did
everybody
want us to make her a cake?
I don't know.
Do you think that was what the angle was? Would she want us?
Probably not now after that.
No.
Oh, goodness me. Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, for your question. And anybody else who wants to send us a question, you can contact us on social media. We are at Bake With A Legend on all of our platforms, or you can email thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. And so we move on to our Showstopper Challenge, where this time we had an illusion biscuit display depicting your favourite meal. Now that, again, I'm really enjoying the fact that they're leaving the briefs really open and then you can make whatever you want, however you want. This was like the animal cakes last week. But we're still leaving lots of room for people to bake something quite spectacular. And we've had very spectacular things the past 2 weeks with these illusion cakes and illusion biscuits. So this was a 4-hour challenge. That seems like a long time, but it's probably really, really not.
No.
Considering how many different types of biscuits and decorations everybody had to do. So what did we think of this challenge? Do we think it was a good one? What stood out?
Yes, I did think it was a good challenge. I thought it left lots of creativity open to the bakers to choose something that they were comfortable with. And I thought there was quite a good variety of biscuits. There were lots of people obviously making shortbreads, which is 3 ingredients. You know, that's a nice, quick, easy biscuit to make. But there were also the Florentines and Tweels. There were people who elected to do sort of interesting and different biscuits. And I thought it really showed their creativity. There was such a wide range of things that people produce. Although we did discover just how popular charcuterie and cheese boards are, didn't we?
Mm. We did.
I would just like to say for the record that
that's not a meal.
Christie's Parma ham looked exactly like Parma ham. It did not look like bacon. It was perfect. Yeah, as soon as she saw it, it looked just like Parma ham. It was spot on. Everyone was like, it looks like bacon. Don't listen to them, Christie. It was beautiful. Thank you.
It was. And of course, it's pork. Of course, it's the same thing. But no, I thought you were going to say cheese board isn't a meal. Like, that's just a snack, right? That's not really a meal. Is that? That was my problem with that.
It depends how much cheese you're having on the cheese board. I could easily make a meal out of cheese. I'm sure Howard can as well.
I'm in the minority. Okay, fine.
I thought it was a brilliant challenge because although it was fancy and all the lovely things that we like to see in a showstopper, because we do like it to be fancy, don't we? Everything, I think, we could have made at home. We may not have chosen to because who's going to eat that many biscuits in one go? But I just thought it was, I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. I'm not sure what I would have done. Charcuterie, I'm sure, was a great choice because it gave you a way of showing all sorts of different skills and biscuits. I mean, there were a couple that we didn't mention. There were some very, very mini mackerel. And there were some biscotti, which actually I probably wouldn't have made, although I make biscotti all the time. It's just it takes so blooming long to bake because you've got one bit of baking and then you let it cool and then you chop it up and then you bake it for a bit more and then you flip it over and you bake it a bit more. I wouldn't have chosen the biscotti, although a couple of them did. Made a very good katsu chicken biscotti, didn't it, from Tasha. Oh, a great challenge, a brilliant challenge. And I think they all did pretty well, actually, didn't you?
Yeah.
I love the painted bowl from Tasha. I thought the painted bowl from Tasha was just beautiful.
I like the steamed bun basket as well, the dumpling basket. That was great. Abby's.
Yeah, I like the idea. I'm not sure I liked the end of it in the end, but...
Wow, brutal.
I
thought as an illusion, it was very effective, and I liked all the little dumplings. I thought there was a great deal of variety. It reminded me of... was it Jan made an illusion cake and it was like a bowl of ramen or something?
Yeah, something like that. She did, didn't she? That was beautiful.
Yeah. There were sort of lots of different, they had lots of different colours and stuff. But I did like the people who made sort of those inventive shapes without using just a load of fondant as well. And I think obviously we'll get on to Josh, I'm sure, in due time. But his was quite something, I thought. Stunning. I thought that was
absolutely stunning, wasn't it?
I think you've got to pick which way you want to go with an illusion cake because... I think there are some that looked exactly like they would have done in real life. Like, I think Abby's looked exactly like a steamer, exactly like dumplings. And those things themselves aren't particularly pretty to look at, but it did look exactly like it.
Mm.
But then you go to somebody else's, like Dana's, for example, the pizza. It was lovely, but it was a bit cartoony. But that's the point. So which way do you go? Do you go hyper-realistic or do you go slightly cartoony? So I just wonder if that's why Abby's didn't maybe look the prettiest, but it was very realistic in that sense.
I think the cartoony style is definitely nice. We particularly enjoyed Nikki's beaver last week, didn't we?
just behave.
That's never going to get old,
just
is it?
It's never going to get old.
The pizza thing, though, she just made a mistake. I don't know why she made it two layers deep. If she'd have made it one layer deep, it would have looked like a sort of a deep pan pizza, but it just looked like a cake. It was so tall. I don't quite know why she did that. The fig roll around the edge, that was inspired.
I love the cheese pull.
I
think Dana's got some great ideas. She's got some great ideas.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the one I didn't quite get, I have to say, was Saku's, because there seemed to be an awful lot of different flavours on there. We literally had everything from sweet to savoury, didn't we? And sort of onions.
And actual onions.
Yes.
Yeah, what was that about? But it's actually onions, babe. Like,
she didn't look happy about that, did she?
No.
And I don't know whether she was joking or just really stressed. But if she'd gone really to me in that way, I would have been really quite cross, I think. I just didn't like that. I didn't like it at all.
I think she was under pressure, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. It just made me think, ooh, I've just written, not sure that's nice, !! There we go. Not that nice.
One thing I didn't understand about her is, now listen, I wasn't paying the closest attention, but she was making some kind of Sri Lankan breakfast plate. Is that what it was?
Yes, indeed.
And some of the things, like where she had the egg in the middle of what just looked like a biscuit had been wrapped around the... I was like, what is this?
Now, I had a look at this because I didn't know what they were, and it's called a hopper. And it looks very, it's like very thin pastry, like almost like painted around the inside of a frying pan.
Right.
A bit like Walker pastry or brick pastry. And then there's a an egg in the middle. And I had a look at some pictures and it does look quite accurate as to what it is.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But yes, it was, I think possibly maybe just because they weren't immediately recognisable to my Western eyes anyway.
And just not very beautiful.
Yeah.
So I just wasn't particularly inspired by sakus, but, you know, I think the flavours were okay, so it just wasn't, it didn't jump out at me in the way that some other people's did.
And is this something to think about when you're doing something like this? Is it more important to do something that's iconically recognisable, like a burger? Now, I'm not saying a Sri Lankan breakfast isn't recognisable, but something like a burger is very iconic. So is half the work done for you if you pick something like a burger? Because people say, oh, yes, it's a burger. They don't have to work out what it is, even though it might be more personal to you. Would something like a burger or fish and chips or something be more iconic to a British audience, potentially?
I think the other thing about a burger is it's round. And I think that's why Josh was so very, very clever, because actually he could create these very individual round biscuits that look like slices of tomato, that look like burgers, that look like burger buns.
The tomato? And,
yeah, unbelievable.
Oh my God.
Is that window
they were
pain?
So beautiful.
Yeah, stunning.
They were.
Stunning.
They were beautiful. And yes, Jane, you're absolutely right. It was like a sugar biscuit outline. And then in the middle, he put crushed up boiled sweets. So it had like a window pane effect when you held it
really
up.
Clever.
I
really clever.
I bow down idea. To that. That was just
how
mind-blowing.
How did he get the curve on the bun at the top?
I think he just rounded the cookie.
The interesting thing is it doesn't need to have a huge curve, does it?
No.
Because actually it's only half a bun. We think of burger buns as being quite deep, but actually if you're only doing half a burger bun, just needs a gentle curve,
gentle
and suddenly
I thought it was just
it
brilliant.
Looks like a burger.
Yeah, but it was amazing. And they were obviously, the edit can be cruel sometimes, and when they were sort of comparing Josh's tomato slices to Keith's tomato slices, you were like, there's definitely a one that is a little superior maybe than the other. But I did feel for Keith, because I feel like Keith, the feedback that he's got generally is that his flavours are great, but maybe he's not the most artistic in terms of the presentation. And the thing is, when you eat someone else's food, it's about what it tastes like at the end of the day. Mm. It's got to taste good. That's what really, really matters.
Yes, it does, but we are judging a television show, and the only way we can judge it is on the visual effects. And
that is true.
I didn't think Keith looked bad, to be perfectly honest, and I was very
glad. It wasn't terrible.
No, I didn't think so. And I thought the idea of Tuil, I can never say that word, crisps, for your Pringles was a great idea. I didn't think he did a bad job. Bless him.
No. The Pringles were, and it's, I have one of the ladies I have coffee with every morning is a French woman. And every time I say Tuil, she's like, Tuil, Tuil. I don't think I'll ever get my head around it.
We had a couple of pies as well. We had a steak pie from Nikki, which, again, I think is a really smart thing to do because you've got a lot of good structure. You know, you're making a pie crust out of biscuit. I think that's quite a smart thing to do. I'm not sure. I think the illusion looked good. I think they enjoyed the illusion. The chips were a bit thin, but the chocolate biscuits or steak pieces were very good. But the gingerbread was a bit thick. But Dan's pie, cheese and onion pie, I mean, you had gingerbread plate, shortbread pastry, pistachio shortbread, onions, orange curd cheese sauce, shortbread peas and vanilla biscuit chips, which is boggling my mind. They're sort of beautiful, slightly overdone chips, but a delicious pie and a triumph. It's a really
looked
nice
great.
Pie there. Yeah.
Looked
did
great.
Look good, didn't
yeah.
It? Yeah, it did good. Did good. That's not very good English, is it?
He did good. Good. The boy, good.
Boy,
the boy done, done, done good.
The boy done good.
No, I thought they all did pretty well, actually. Who haven't we talked about? No, we've said
Rowan.
Three charcuterie
we
boards.
Mentioned Rowan.
Have we not mentioned Rowan? Rowan did a charcuterie.
We should,
well,
yeah.
Really, I suppose we should mention Rowan.
I think his illusion wasn't the best. It did take a little bit of work to work out what all the pieces were. The gingerbread crackers looked really good, but again, there was a bit soft with all the fondant on top. And I guess that's something else you've got to think about. You know, it's more artistic to mold an almond sugar cookie into a dome to make a bun. You don't have to add fondant onto the top of everything. But all his flavours were really good, and he's done well with flavours all the way through.
I think the thing with Rowan is that we've all been there in the tent. Well, maybe not Jane. Jane, we made it all the way to the finals, we famously know. But you'll often... You'll be doing a challenge and you'll look round and you suddenly realise that you kind of missed a trick with the brief, or you've like not interpreted it the same way as everyone else. And I think Rowan probably had a look round the tent and he thought, ooh, I've slightly misunderstood here. And he sort of like put royal icing on cookies and not realising that he could have done things like what Josh did and just making the burger top, or, you know, the rolled fondant to make the marzipan to make the parma ham. I think he just sort of looked around the tent and thought, oh, no, I've missed a trick. And I think it was a bit unfortunate that other people had done a charcuterie as well, because in comparison, his looked a little basic. But, you know, the flavours, I think, were there, but it just, it's one of those challenges where you look at everyone else and you just think, oh, I hope I'll just be safe, you know. You realise you're not in line to win anymore, you know?
But some of them did a lot of different biscuits. Tasha, whose bowl I mentioned earlier, which I thought was so pretty, the way she'd painted it, looked lovely. I'm not sure she did many types of biscuits. She had a matcha Viennese cup. She had the, I can never pronounce it, but whatever she made the bowl out of. And then she did some biscotti. So I don't think she made as many different types of biscuits, maybe, as some of the others. And again, we do tend to throw the kitchen sink at our bakes when we've been given the brief. And maybe she was very sensibly paired back as well, that gave her the time to paint her bowl. Because I don't think they said how many different types of biscuits. You could have just had one type of biscuit in there, unless we're missing a bit of the brief, which is always possible.
True.
I thought Matty did well, didn't he? He did.
Yeah.
Put all sorts into it. His little
macaron
grapes. And,
yes, yeah. His cheese was fantastic. It was coconut lime camembert, a cranberry, lots of shortbread, which is nice and solid. Cranberry pistachio shortbread brie, Garibaldi crackers. I wasn't convinced about the macaron grapes because they didn't look like grapes. The colours were lovely, but they were split in half and then filled back together, and it looked like two halves of grapes that had been put back together. So I was
some were supposed to be olives as well, I think, weren't they?
Oh, some were supposed to be olives grapes as well. Okay.
Yeah, so but they looked a bit identical.
I appreciate the skill,
but I think that was more about Matty trying to show off a skill than it was, you know, which he obviously did.
He did.
You know, macaron are notoriously tricky to do, and it was brave of him to do it. And I think he pulled them off well enough. But yeah, I agree. They didn't really fit the illusion, maybe, but I'm sure he just wanted to show off some technique, because that's what we want people to know in the tent. It's like, I am a good baker. Look, I can do all these things. Yeah. You know, so I understand.
Yeah, please ask me to make a cake.
So, after a pretty strong showstopper and actually a really good biscuit week overall for everybody, there were no major, major disasters. Unfortunately, we do have to say goodbye to somebody, as is always the way on Bake Off. But let's talk about a star baker first. Now, we all thought it was going to be Josh, at least I did, with that amazing showstopper with the fantastic burger. But it was Tasha, was second week star baker for biscuit week. She had a really, really good week overall, and she was convinced it was going to be Josh as well. So, Jane, what do you think? Is that a well-deserved star baker for Tasha?
I think it really was well-deserved. I must admit, I was in two minds whether it was going to be Josh or Tasha, but she had a pretty good signature, didn't she? I can't remember where she came in the technical, but, you know, I just loved her painted bowl, and that biscotti looked amazing. So she was brilliant. She kept it quite simple, didn't she? She didn't do half a dozen different types of biscuits. She kept it simple and executed it beautifully. And we always say that's the trick to going forward each week, is to keep it relatively simple, execute it beautifully, make it look stunning, and make it taste really good. And she seemed to just get everything right. So, yeah, well done, Tasha.
Absolutely. And of course, we have to say goodbye to somebody. And unfortunately, Dan, after all your lovely comments about him last week and that he's such a character, we have to say goodbye to Keith. Amos last week, Keith this week. I can't cope with this. They're all too nice. This makes me so unhappy, poor Keith.
Yeah,
I think I was very sad because we do, there were standout people. And when we start watching for the podcast, it's really difficult to get our head around all the different new names. And, you know, Keith and Amos both stood out right from the start as wonderful characters. And we've lost two of our fabulous characters. There's nothing against the other 10. They're all delightful. But I was beginning to really love Keith and I was looking forward to his stand-up. So,
yes! I know, not, no more stand-up.
Not to be seen, sadly. Not to be seen. So it's always sad to see them go so early. Yeah. Bye, Keith. You did so well.
Oh, gosh. It feels really personal. I don't know why.
It does.
And if you are all starting to really crave some biscuits after listening to this, as I know I am, then you will be absolutely delighted to know that we have Jane's Great British Bake Off Mystery Bake Along class for week two, for Biscuit Week, on Sunday the 8th of October, where you'll be baking another fabulous British biscuit classic, a take on the walnut whip. So do come along to that Sunday the 8th of October. Mark it in your diaries. Hopefully we will see some of you there. Howard, Jane and Dan, thank you so much for joining me today to chat about Biscuit Week. And we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.